Red Hat X podcast series, discussing topics around application modernization, cloud-native development, securing workloads in the cloud, and partnering with Red Hat. Well, thank you for joining us today. It's another Tech Talk episode, and we are here with John Aaron, founder and CEO of Aaronetix. You know, the internet was originally designed to share data, but unfortunately, it's become something most would recognize as very far removed from sharing data. As companies are following the line like lemmings, how do we tangibly break step and start down a safer and newer road? Is compliance the answer? What do we do? Today, we're going to discuss what the problems are. We're going to discuss the paradigm shift, and we're going to discuss some interesting mindset approach to this whole thing. It's very important. Let's have some fun. John, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining me again.
Thank you, Brian.
Well, I'm glad you're here. And I'm very excited about our conversation. I know I always say I'm excited about these conversations, but this is one of those very important ones that we're going to dive into in just a minute. But just in case people don't know who you are, tell us about yourself and what you do.
My name is John Aaron, and I founded Aaronetix March of 2017. I had an accident that put me back about 2 years, and now we have a product that can impact national security.
I like that. Very simple, to the point. Love it. So what are you nerding out on right now currently?
Currently, we're taking a little bit of research and looking into FireWire protocols and MIL-SPEC 1553 protocols so our product can live on planes or boats.
Interesting. Cool.
We like to call aircraft boats.
Yeah.
Like aircraft carriers boats, though it's an aircraft carrier.
You know, they call subs boats.
They do. Yeah. I have to watch my words with my Navy friends.
I know. So the ships and the boats, and then, you know, you drive a sub, but then what do you pilot? An aircraft carrier, right?
I don't know.
See, now I got to get my terms right. There's all these, I love all the different terms. Is actually a lot of fun though. But yeah, you want to get on that, or else you're one of the muggles if you don't know the terms is what they
Right. Right. You're like, who's this guy?
Exactly. All right. So you mentioned that you work with national security with Aaronetix, but any more about Aaronetix that you want to share?
We're also considering helping out the small companies, that if we can lift one, we can lift all.
Yeah.
The Chinese paradigm, that we're considering open sourcing our product for non-commercial use.
Oh, nice.
So if you, Brian, want to use it to guard your system, then why not? $2 a month should be something that you should want to, yes, sir, I'll do that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, I've always been one of those people too who, and granted, you know, some of the things you kind of go, well, I think I'm protected, you know, and this is a personal side of things, you know, because we talk about the enterprise side of things all the time, but from a personal side, it's like, well, I think I'm protected. I think I have what I need, you know, but then you're really not sure. And then you hear about something else that comes and you go, okay, what do I need to do here? And how helpful is this company on the personal side? Because of course, enterprise is usually significantly more robust. So yeah, I like that. I like that you're looking at doing that. And I will tell you that people in general just do not have enough protection on a personal side of things.
That's true. I recently listened to a podcast on the flight back to Cleveland yesterday from Orlando on the dissolution of Symantec, on how Symantec is nothing like it was in the 80s.
Yeah.
And the only thing left of Symantec is their product called LifeLock.
Well, so I mentioned in the intro that when it comes to the internet, you know, things have changed, but yet, of course, we want to start down a safer and a better road. I know you're passionate about this. I know you're passionate about, you know, national security in general, too. What led to this passion? And, you know, what's your desire for our conversation today?
I recognize, Brian, that there are problems with our current operating systems. There are problems with our current hardware. And one of the quickest, fastest, most efficacious way to remedy these problems in hardware and software is a product that can easily recognize the hole in there and mitigate it for you. So we kind of remove any user, so to speak, and that the machine can say, oh, there's a hole in your hardware. We're aware of that. Let's not do that again.
Yeah.
Or if there's a hole in software, we have that. Let's not do that again.
So what drove you to this, though, personally?
The national adversaries that decided to hop onto my home router 3 different times.
Really?
And each time I had no actual program that let me know, oh, by the way, that was downtown Beijing hanging out on my home router. Hmm. Why they were there or how they got there, maybe beyond the purview of most conversations, but it was weird to me.
Yeah.
That there are holes in common products everywhere, which have known issues that are exploited. And so we needed a solution that can remedy the exploit. Doing something that I cannot do, watch my stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Because like you and doing podcasts, like me doing work, we're not sitting looking at the computer all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You're trying to make your coffee. You're trying to do another podcast. You're trying to do research on FireWire. Mm-hmm. There's no way you could look at these sort of things.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's kind of the whole point, is that we're busy with so many other tasks that we want to, what is it, like set it and let it go kind of thing. You just want to, you want to know that you're protected and taken care of, but you don't have to monitor it constantly.
Right. Part of our product is that we really can set it and forget it.
So you, because you found three different national adversaries on your home router, that's kind of what you said, you know what, I need to do something about this. And is that how the founding of Aeronetics came about?
Enough. That's one of the reasons. Yeah.
Okay.
There has to be a solution out there. There has to be a solution. And when I found none, we have to make one now.
Yeah. Well, good.
And it goes down to that we have all these classes to teach you things and all these certifications and bigger marketing, when really there was no certification model that would ever educate me that my own home router was hacked. Mm-hmm. They don't teach those things.
Hmm. I'm kind of curious. So if we take a step back a little bit, how did we get here? Like, why are we where we're at today with these problems with the internet?
I think, Brian, we're in a space that is blown up with identity solutions. Mm-hmm. We have identity problems that people like you and I, if not you and I, Brian, take pictures ad nauseum, that we can't even delete the volume of pictures quick enough to keep in pace with what are being created. And we have machine learning now of fake identities.
Yeah.
There are LinkedIn friends that post fake stuff about them, and it looks like their face, but to an algorithm, it's not them.
Yeah.
And it probably boils down to that when VC investors made Facebook or Twitter, not to name too many names, but they didn't think of their national security impact. Like most, they were there to make money, like you or I would do. Mm-hmm. But they didn't have a forward-looking view of how dangerous this idea actually is and what's actually jeopardized. So I think what we need to do is have recognition that there are solutions out there that do exist that can fix this national security problem. That one intrusion is actually not a problem here and now, but it's an intrusion that spans generations.
Talk a little more about the identity abuses. I know that, you know, a couple of examples would be like Elizabeth Holmes, Theranos, that kind of thing. Talk a little bit more about that and the problem with that.
Theranos was invested, and there's a whole court case about that nowadays, of what could have been. And what we were thinking, Brian, was the juxtaposition of that with Facebook and identity, where the idea of what Theranos and Elizabeth wanted to do could have occurred given enough time. Maybe it was just cut too short of what could have been. General Mattis was on the stand suggesting that he actually saw these things and spoke about these things. Not going into that, but there was definitely the opposite juxtaposition with the Facebook venture capitalists making money on Facebook, when in Elizabeth Holmes' case, they were effectively not VCs and of themselves, but they were families that wanted their money back.
Hmm. Did you see The Social Dilemma by chance on Netflix?
I did not.
Okay. I think you might be interested in that one. It was a very interesting, I mean, of course, every documentary has its own agenda. So, you know, as much as you go, okay, this is 100% truth, you still have to ask that, is it really 100% truth? But it was a fascinating documentary on how people are, well, basically it was talking about social media and how it, here's originally how it was created and here's where it is right now. And like you said, it kind of, it went in a place that they didn't expect it to go. And then of course, money drove the decisions and they had quite a few interviews from some of the top people from Google and Twitter and Facebook and some of those kind of organizations, you know, that came on and talked about, here's what's actually going on. Here's how they're doing it. Here's why they're doing it. So I think you might enjoy that. But it really does highlight the fact that I mean, there's manipulation, of course. I mean, obviously, but there's a lot of control. There's a lot of breaching, of course, of personal and private data. And of course, it's money driven. So is that what was intended? I mean, did we start out to go down that path? And why are we going down that path?
I think we're going down that path, Brian, because that's just where the money goes. That's kind of what industry wants. That's what the fuel is fueling. That we had the Facebook whistleblower recently enough. Have you seen that?
Mm-mm.
And that was pointing out probably the abuses shared by the social dilemma, where all these minds are actually also being tweaked, for lack of a better word, changed. And so what we have is a certification model that wants you to do this. They have a marketing engine that wants you to behave similar to a Minority Report response.
Mm-hmm.
We have this fuel now that is a dopamine response that do this. That, and so it's leading us down to an internet that we haven't really experienced before. The internet's brand new, but we can fix it. I think we can fix it by, I've seen recently another open speech, free speech, Twitter, so to speak. I don't remember its name, but that did exist, which part of the innate human qualities of what could be in that. So I think that what we have to do is recognize our own behavior as a whole industry, as a whole country,
mm-hmm.
and really share what we think is the right thing to do or what we think is the wrong thing to do. We have 50 states, right?
Yeah.
And so we already have a dividing line left and right, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
There's cultural maps everywhere. But what we probably need to do is not only take away the phones, but recoil some of the aspects of these marketing giants, these certification models, and help people regain what they once knew of themselves. There's recently a Department of Agriculture advertising I saw that had a young boy on a gaming controller, and the next frame was in the same position looking at a leaf, and in effect it was go outside.
Yeah.
And that wasn't steered to me.
Yeah.
That was steered to an 8-year-old or 10-year-old.
Hmm.
And as people grow and get older, the Facebook social media images of them as a baby 20 years later.
Yeah.
The GDPR effectively mandated the right to forget.
Hmm.
I don't know if you've seen that, but it's difficult to forget when you knowingly put your own identity online.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, whatever they've told us this in so many different areas, you know, but talking about that, whatever you put out on social media, just remember it's there permanently. I mean, even doing this podcast right now, it's there. You're not getting rid of it. What's done is done kind of thing. So you're right. There's a level of, at least I think there's a level of concern there, because people then can take anything and, you know, of course, take it out of context and do other things with it and stuff like that. But yeah, how do you protect that? And or is it just is it unplug and, you know, go off the grid kind of thing? Or you know what I mean?
I do, because then we have security of national systems mm-hmm. that are in compartmented zones, facilities.
Yeah.
That are removed from the internet because the internet has become a dangerous place. And so with the recent events over in Eastern Europe, you can catch the news where the Department of Foreign Affairs was shut down from Russian interference.
Yeah.
And you can't blame them. If they want to keep in a compartmented facility, mm-hmm. then you have to do that. But that's not what it was designed to do 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we regain control of those environments?
Yeah. You know, the internet was originally intended to share data. So how do we regain control? Because, you know, especially enterprises and companies have to be on the internet. We have to do this. It's not, you know, we can't just go off the grid and expect to succeed. That's not going to work, of course. So how do companies regain control? How do we in general regain control?
I think, Brian, that we need to involve some small aspect of machine learning and artificial intelligence that can actually take our action for us, that we can actually do what we have to do and let that small thing do what it has to do. We're also looking over it, but trusting a computer to do a little bit more for a computer's sake should be a trustworthy thing where the computer wouldn't have an issue. And if the computer has an issue, at least let me know.
Mm-hmm.
If your hardware and your podcast machinery had a hiccup during the podcast, and there's definitely the little tiny chip that infiltrated top companies and it's forking all your data to a national adversary, at least you'd like to know. And you're smart enough with your podcast machinery, you could probably flick that thing and turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, stop that. Don't do that.
Yeah.
And that's probably what we need. If you're smart enough, you'd go into the hardware and say, oh, well, take that chip out. But basically, we need a common switch, so to speak, that says, hey, do this or don't do this.
So you're saying it's as simple as, you know, something that's monitoring for the threats. And then it alerts you, and then you essentially flip the switch on whatever that is. I mean, that's the idea that you're coming up with.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Is it our product really gives you an opportunity to pause mm-hmm. or shut it down?
Well, I think that's the simplicity that we need for sure.
This what we need is a whole country.
Yeah.
Which is why we considered open sourcing our software. That if we can lift one boat, we can lift all boats. The rising tide lifts all.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about national security in general, too. I know this is one of those topics where, in fact, I think we touched on this in the last episode a little bit, how national security has become needed. But if we were to do things correctly, you know, initially, do we really need national security at that point? I mean, of course, it needs to be there for other reasons, but, you know, do they need to get involved? But I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are on national security in general and also what the best path is.
Well, I think if you can believe, Brian, some people I know in the national security circles don't have an email.
Mm.
They barely have a phone number. And it's an extreme, so to speak, right? That how could you not have a phone number in 2021?
Yeah.
2022, 2023. How do you not have email? But they don't.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the length they have to go to keep them safe.
Yeah.
So is that really the proper way? Or is there a different set of questions they could be asking on a large concept of ignorance? Of what more questions can we ask rather than what more band-aids can we apply?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Well, all a band-aid does is cover up a symptom, but it's not getting to the root of the cause either.
Right. There was definitely a website I went to this morning and ended up having a conversation with a gentleman on the phone whose phone number is on the email sign up. There's no phone numbers on the website, but the auto reply includes his phone number. So I call it. He's not there anymore. They're like, that's interesting. Why is it hidden like that?
Yeah.
And so there's the thought there, Brian, of national adversaries and InfoSec, of some of us that hide behind a black sunglasses, a hat on LinkedIn. And there's others of us that are just standing there plainly, not hiding anything. And it's, what are you hiding and why?
Yeah.
Or are you too ignorant and sharing the full profile of yourself? I don't know what the answer is there.
What about small companies? You know, I could see small companies and enterprises who are saying, you know, they go after the big ones. We're not making as much money as they are. We're still small. We're okay. What about that?
I think the small companies need it the most.
Okay.
They need it the most. The large Lockheed Martins and Peritons of the world, they have infrastructure and the intelligence to mitigate the issue. They have the personnel. We need to guard the churches, the banks, the small banks, the normal mom and pop shops around town. Because if we can do that, we can effectively rid out any problem. Much like the old book on, I think, the Scarlet Fever. Is that what that is? The letter A on your chest?
Oh, the Scarlet Letter?
The Scarlet Letter,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Yep.
It's similar to what we need in 2022. To really, hey, not to ban your neighbor, but to be aware of, hey, they need help.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people don't realize that small businesses, I mean, they say small businesses are the backbone of the country, you know, here in the United States, but it's true that small businesses make up the majority of businesses across the nation. And so much more emphasis is focused on larger business. And yet you lose the small business and then what?
Oh, that's one way to kill the whole country.
Yeah.
It's the small stuff. I mean, I think they mentioned don't sweat the small stuff, but it's all small stuff, right?
Yeah.
And what you need is small companies. Looking around the town here, it would not be apparent this is an entire DOD infrastructure town. And I'm headquartered in Cleveland. So back in World War II time, we used to make tanks here. And so there's a lot of infrastructure here to do military nuts and bolts.
Yeah.
And so they're looking at the current cyber maturity model for certification of what that means.
Yeah.
When a few of us know that the CMMC doesn't necessarily help you, it's a Band-Aid. That 9 out of 10 were completely compliant, but they were still whack-a-mole.
Yeah.
They were. And it's, is really compliance the issue? Is that really the root of the issue? Because if you're going to make bullets or butter, you have to be CMC compliant if you're going to do any work in the DOD. But you can't even begin to make that bullet or butter because you need the certification first.
Yeah.
And so it puts you out of business.
Hmm.
So yeah, is the certification really the answer? Or is it more of the Elizabeth Holmes and Facebook thing of fake it before you make it?
You know, just using a completely different example, which is very, very similar here, but, you know, people are going to understand this too, is that, you know, you see organic certifications on foods or fair trade. And yet, I'm a huge coffee nerd. I roast my own coffee for fun. One of the things that I kind of learned by accident was all of these organic and fair trade coffees, well, they have to get these very expensive certifications like you're talking about. But it really didn't mean much because most of the farms that, you know, the good farms, by the way, you know, when you talk about high quality coffee that you're going to see in that specialty coffee sort of scenario, they're coming from high quality farms that are doing it right. They're putting out like extremely high quality in the top 1-3% of coffee crops in the world. And so, you know, it's incredible coffee. It tastes amazing. Almost every one of them would be considered organic and fair trade, but they can't afford the United States certifications. If they were to be forced to do it, it would put them out of business, like you said, and it wouldn't matter because they're still doing it. So I'm using that as an example because everybody knows the organic and fair trade thing, and a lot of people are like, well, does it mean anything? But in this particular situation, are you saying that the certification of compliance isn't the answer as well?
I am.
In a similar scenario?
Yes, I agree with you. Okay. It's analogous to the, it's a similar thing. You couldn't have, when I first had organic food introduced to me in 1998, I thought it was false. And lo and behold, eat an organic apple for 1 year, and then eat a conventional apple. I don't know if, have you tried that, Brian?
No.
It tastes like aluminum.
Interesting.
It tastes like aluminum. And I know people definitely just don't believe the organic fad is what they call the organic fad.
Yeah.
And I know farmers who really say you either need to use organic or you need to use chemicals because you can't feed the volume of people we have nowadays.
Yeah.
And so really, is that a similar problem that we have with certifications, or is it too far fetched for people to really understand? Is that something I should buy or something I shouldn't buy?
Mm-hmm.
The economic protest is something that we're also aware of, that the best protest is economic. So it's that we have the whole country being fueled from the massive investment to companies, when really there's really rigid criteria.
Mm-hmm.
And they want you to have 2 to 3 people. They want you to have a large market. They want you to have all these ducks in a row. But it's like a certification model. Did you do all those hoops first? And is it really the solution, or just a Band-Aid?
Sure. So what is the solution, or what is one possible solution for this?
I think people need to commonly speak to their neighbor. I recently had a conversation with a gentleman, we can call him Chase, and he mentioned he has to go take care of his wife now. It's those real conversations that we need. It's that realism that Facebook and these virtual identities don't afford us, these metaverses of virtual reality. There was a Twitter room, a Twitter space on virtual real estate in the metaverse, if you can believe that.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to say about that.
I'm kind of thinking like, how does that work?
Right?
Yeah.
So if I get a deed to something that I own in the metaverse and I own it, how does that transfer to my reality?
Exactly.
And can I take it to the bank? And can I sell it?
Yeah. Well,
yes. So I think that one of the ways we can laugh in hindsight and really stare and like, wow, really? But check in with your neighbor. That if your neighbor is hacked, lend your expertise. You'd lend them expertise if the car was being fixed or broken, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if they wanted to share coffee with them.
Yeah, you know, and you mean obviously neighbor literally, but also it can mean, I like to call it the coopetition, you know, it can mean it with your competitors as well, as your quote neighbor is this other business over there that you're sort of competing with, but you could cooperate with as well.
Right. Right, Brian. That's what I intended with that, the definition of that word neighbor.
Sure.
I'm not here to put you out of business. I'm here to collaborate with you.
Exactly.
That you have a decent product in of itself, and I have a decent product in of itself. Let's work together. It's the, I think it's an African ideology. If you want to go fast, go solo. If you want to go far, go together.
Mm-hmm.
It's, we need that sort of collaboration, that sort of co-working.
So true.
That could solve it. Yeah. That could solve it, because what we need here is more of a hybrid mind that can undo the large and loud marketing voices on what you should be buying or what you should be doing.
Mm-hmm. You know, 15 years ago, I had the privilege of really working with other companies. You know, I had mine, others had theirs, and we boosted each other up. We helped each other. We referred each other, even though we were both, well, not both, we were all competing for, you know, a piece of the pie. We all needed our business. We all needed to make the money we needed to make. But that one scenario was one of the best examples I've ever seen of when we all who were competitors were working together to help each other, to refer each other, to boost each other, to even teach each other. All of us actually grew significantly, almost equally across the board. My business tripled. Their businesses at least doubled.
Wow.
We just saw amazing things. I have never seen that level of cooperation and collaboration since. And also as a result, I've seen people struggle more because everybody wants to do it themselves. Everybody wants to, you know, I got this. I want to be an individual. I want to do it my way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. And same kind of thing when it's going into levels of security and other things like that too. Who's got your back? So,
right.
I mean, granted, in a company, all right, you got, you know, hundreds of employees and stuff and you've got all the systems set up. That's great, you know, but still. There is that level of getting to know each other and helping each other out. The trust that we, I think, lack right now.
Right. If I may steal a bit of a text right now, but the computer of today is the machine many sought throughout the ages to automate calculation and free it from the frailties of humans and their intervention of judgment. And that's kind of where we're at. But it's the factor impeding software as our own mental ability to comprehend the essence of complex problems,
mm-hmm.
of ignorance. How do we deal with that?
Yeah.
And that is an intrinsic complexity that will never go away.
Yeah.
Because I'm not changing into a robot tomorrow. I don't think you are either,
mm-hmm.
but it's that style of thinking. It's the hybrid thinking or hive thinking,
mm-hmm.
community thinking.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just taking a step back personally, and I know that this does affect companies and enterprises. It does, is that individually we're watching too much of the news and the news wants us to think a certain way. When I was in college, I went into public relations and news writing. I was trained to do this. I was trained to tell people what I wanted them to believe and think. So I was really good at persuasion. I got out of that because I didn't want to be that person, you know? But yeah. I know that that's what they're doing. So there's that. There's a huge lack of trust personally. I mean, you go out into the world and people are looking at you weird and, you know, what's this person going to do? You know, there's constantly that. So that translates into our companies and into our industry, into our enterprises. It translates into that. We don't trust anyone.
Yes.
So then these companies are, anyway, I don't want to get too far into that, but I mean, it's definitely an issue. And that, to me, that's the way, like, how do you break down these boundaries on a personal level, on an enterprise level? You start listening. You start asking questions. You start trying to understand other people's sides. You start collaborating.
Right.
Maybe that's naive to say that. I don't know, but that's what I believe.
I think that's spot on. There's a book I had post-accident from Rob Bell of Drops Like Stars, and it's all about collaboration. It's mainly a business book, but it's not. It's how do you trust people? And that's why I think we run into these issues of these large marketing budgets to get your certification, because it doesn't really help anyone but their coffers. They feel better because they can go out Friday night.
Yeah.
When we have certification, instead of just trusting people genuinely and teaching them genuinely. There are thoughts about like a universal income. I don't know if you've seen that in the podcasts or news, but with the changing economy, the hybrid workforce, how can we keep everyone safe in a changed environment? How can we keep every computer secure in a changed environment? But really, what's going to look like when your job disappears?
Yeah. And I mean, we can say that we need to move down that path of trust. And I think that is something, I think that's step one. The reality is that there are still adversaries out there that you can't trust, no matter how much. They still want your data. They still want your stuff. They still want to steal from you. They want to attack. So the step two is you still got to have that security. You still have to take care of your company. So trust is the first step, but how do we actually move forward looking into the future? What's that second step that we all need to take right now?
We need to come to terms with the computers that we use and how we behave and adopt solutions that can mitigate those issues. The current thought, Brian, is a concept, an ideology called zero trust, which I'm sure you've heard of. Have you?
Oh, yeah.
And my funnest, most interesting concept of zero trust ideology of try that with your bank.
Yeah.
I recently had to get a one-time password from my bank. It took me an hour, Brian, an hour to get a 15-second timeout OTP. And at the end of it, I really said, who have I called? Because I told you everything about me and I've heard nothing about you.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of intrinsic abuses of trust that we're running into.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and it's the network flow of data on the internet that became a problem. It's also the network flow of data on social media that became a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know too many people back in 2005 that were saying, oh, darn, let's shut Facebook down. They're not doing us any favors.
Yeah.
But they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
We had VC investment that was growing Facebook left and right because there is economic opportunity there. And so we need to actually have a paradigm shift of how we actually operate.
Mm-hmm.
You have to work with your neighbor. We're looking to work with Intel to put our firmware, to put our product in firmware.
Interesting.
It should be interesting. It's difficult to do, I think.
Yeah, no, that is. I'm thinking about that going, okay, I like this. I like where you're going with this.
And it's a way to keep your computer secure.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know you can't produce I'm not sure how many integrated controllers or an IC are in a motherboard or a mainboard, but a machine builds that nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way you could actually take control of errors that machine's putting in.
I like that. So, I mean, I'm going to recommend go check out Aeronetics and you know what you guys do and stuff like that, because I like the direction you're going. And again, it's, you know, there are a lot of solutions out there. I feel like it's interesting. The more that I talk to people, the more that I go, this is a great solution. But then this one's a great solution too. And then this one's a great solution. And if we somehow work together on these solutions, I think the issue is, I don't know. Maybe this is just my personal opinion on this one. You start seeing the, okay, well, I know I've got this, then I've got this, and I've got this, and I've got this. And all of a sudden we've got this overcomplicated level of systems. And then, you know, the dev teams are freaking out. This is just over the top. You know, we can't work efficiently with all this. So simplification is really important, I think. I mean, again, that's my opinion on this, but it would be interesting to see just, again, the collaboration, but I would definitely say go check out Aeronetics and what you guys are doing. So how do we get more information and find out all of that?
Our web address, Brian, is aeronetics.com. That's okay. aronetics.com. we're open to share our technology with companies that would like to learn about what we're doing.
Okay. Awesome. Sounds great. Well, any final thoughts that you have?
I would like advice on how I can make better coffee.
I can definitely talk to you about that, you know, as yeah, no problem on that.
Thank you. And in turn, I'll educate you on information security.
Oh, I appreciate that. That'd be awesome. I love it. Well, John, thank you so much. I feel like there needs to be a part two on this one too, because I would like to, I'd like to really dive into some use cases the next time we talk and kind of talk about some of the people that you're working with and helping out. And of course, we'll keep it anonymous as usual, but I would love to hear more about that just to see how it's changing their businesses and their levels of security, their peace of mind and all of that as well.
I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I'd appreciate that.
Cool. Well, John, thanks again. I really appreciate your time and thanks for joining me.
You're welcome, Brian. Thank you for having me.
John Aaron, founder and CEO of Aaronetics. My name is Brian, and thank you again for joining us here on the Red Hat X podcast series. For more information on Aaronetics and our discussion today, head on over to aaronetics.com. We're going to be doing a follow-up with a little bit more nuts and bolts coming up very soon. So we're looking forward to that one, but have a wonderful day in the meantime, and we'll talk to you in the next episode.